Hello, and welcome to Queer Crime episode number 16. I'm your host, Patrick. Queer Crime is the podcast that discusses crimes committed against and committed by LGBT plus people. The contents of this podcast are not intended to offend anyone within the LGBT plus community or beyond. They're simply a way of reminding ourselves that there are some horrible fuckers out there, regardless of their sexual identity. Yes, you've guessed it. The language and content within this podcast is intended for a mature audience and those with an open mind. If you have bigoted views, stop listening now. Bigoted views are not welcome. Conversely, if you have nice views, comments or suggestions, please send them my way. You can find me on Twitter on crime_queer. Finally, if you could rate my podcast on whatever platform you listen to podcasts, I'd really appreciate it. So with that plea aside, it's on to the story. But as always, I'll start with what was happening in terms of the gay High Holy calendar. It's 2012. Best musical at the Tonys was Once. Outstanding comedy series at the Emmys was Modern Family. Song of the Year at the Grammys was Rollin' in the Deep by Adele. And Best Picture at the Oscars was The Artist. Before I move on to the episode, I would like to acknowledge my sources which have helped me piece this story together. These were BBC News, CNN News, and the Chilean news website, The Clinic. Advance warning. This episode contains details of a violent hate crime. It won't be suitable for all listeners. In March 2012, the President of Chile, Sebastián Piñera, urged Parliament to speed up the adoption of the law on hate crimes, which had been on the shelf for over 7 years. The law was intended to ban discrimination based on race, ethnicity, religion, sexual orientation, gender, appearance, or disability. The reason it had not progressed for 7 years was because it had been actively opposed by several churches who had argued that the law could pave the way for the legalization of same-sex marriage. Fucking churches. Surely given how much the churches hate all things LGBT, they would be keen for queer people to suffer in marriage just as much as straight people. Idiots. Thankfully, it's the 21st century, and these churches learned that they have no place in deciding what laws should govern a country, and the law was passed. In July 2012, it was signed by the president, and it came into force. The law is known in Chile as the Zamudio Law, in honour of Daniel Zamudio. This is Daniel's story. Daniel Zamudio was born on the 3rd of August 1987 to parents Ivan and Jacqueline, and they lived in San Bernardo, which is about 20 kilometres south of Santiago in Chile, South America. As a child, he loved cooking and he loved drawing pictures, especially drawing pictures of the Titanic. As Daniel grew up, his mother and father suspected he was gay, but that didn't bother them. They loved all of their children equally, as it should be. Daniel told his family at the age of 17 that he was gay. But again, his family didn't care. Around this time, instead of enjoying himself now that he had been unburdened by coming out, he went through some serious upheaval. His parents' marriage fell apart and they separated, and he went to live with his mother and his grandmother. While he was dealing with this, he was confronted with something much more serious. His best friend committed suicide. Coming out as gay, his parents separating, and his best friend committing suicide was a huge amount to contend with. And these combined life-changing events resulted in Daniel sinking into a deep depression, and he dropped out of school. Eventually, his father told him that he appreciated and understood the horrible things he had faced recently, but that he needed to start taking some responsibility for his life. His father told him that he could only get out of his depression if he made some positive changes. He either needed to return to education, or he needed to get a job. Both of his parents were very willing to support Daniel in any way they could. But they were also keen for these events not to define him. They wanted him to have some purpose, and Daniel reluctantly pulled himself together. He got a job and started exploring his life as a young gay man. He made new groups of friends and he went out pubbing and clubbing on the gay scene. By the age of 24, Daniel was working at a Chinese clothing store, but he wanted to improve his future and employment opportunities. He decided to start saving up money so that he could return to education and to study communications. Although Santiago is a capital city, and homosexuality in Chile was decriminalized in 1999, there was still a very distinct undercurrent of homophobia, as there is with most countries. However, unlike other countries, in Chile these crimes didn't get reported. There were no laws to protect people from hate crime, so people just accepted it as a hazard that they had to deal with and made sure to avoid any situations or places where they might put themselves at risk. However, it was sometimes difficult to avoid receiving homophobic abuse. Sometimes this abuse came directly to the gay community within Santiago. For example, one night as Daniel was leaving a gay nightclub, he was approached by a neo-Nazi who told him that he knew who he was, he knew where he worked, and he would kill him. Neo-Nazis sure are total fuckwits, aren't they? I mean, anyone whose ideology is to promote hatred, attack racial and ethnic minorities, promote white supremacy, and persecute LGBT+ people must be a major twat. I wish them every ounce of bad luck that life can throw at them for what they do to people. On Friday the 2nd of March 2012, Daniel left home at 7:30 in the morning to go to work at his job at the Chinese clothing store. He called his mother Jacqueline at about 11 a.m. to say that as it was the weekend, he was going to a friend's house after work and he would stay there. She didn't hear from him again, but that wasn't out of the ordinary. He had already told her that he was going to a friend's house, so she knew where he was and she had no reason to worry. Just before dawn on Saturday the 3rd of March, a night watchman called Ramon Marino was completing one of his patrols around the San Borja Park, a large park in Santiago. As he walked through the lower area of the park with his flashlight, he came across Daniel lying on the ground. Initially, it was so dark that he didn't know what he was looking at, but as he drew nearer, he could see that Daniel was unconscious and he had extensive injuries. He could also see that there was a large rock on top of Daniel's right leg. Ramon immediately called emergency services. While he was waiting for the paramedics and police to arrive, he moved the stone from Daniel's leg and he noticed how heavy it was. He couldn't imagine the pain that Daniel was in. After he moved the stone, he could see that Daniel's leg underneath was crushed, mangled, and broken. His injuries were catastrophic. He later said, quote, "I will never forget those images, because I have never seen such a brutal attack. If I had not made my rounds at that time that night, the most likely thing is that young man would have died where he lay." End quote. But what on earth happened to Daniel? It started almost 5 weeks earlier, when, on the 27th of January, Patricio Ahumada, who was 25 years old, was released early from prison where he was serving a sentence for robbery with intimidation. Patricio was a neo-Nazi thug who absolutely hated foreigners and gay people. He was well known and very much feared in his local area for his unrelenting aggressiveness. He already sounds like a total prick, doesn't he? After he was released from prison, Patricio immediately slipped back into his old ways and he made regular announcements that he was going to kick all of the homosexuals out of the San Borja Park. On Friday the 2nd of March, Patricio was being his usual aggressive self and he was intent on causing harm, so he set about putting his previous homophobic threats in motion. But he wasn't alone. He was accompanied by three friends, Fabian Mora, age 19, Raul Lopez, age 25, and Alejandro Angulo, age 26, who I found out through my research was a Michael Jackson impersonator. Ugh, do people still do that? Weird bastard. The description of what happened next is taken from the confession of Patricio's accomplice, Raul, which was later corroborated by another accomplice, Fabian. Be prepared, this next section in Daniel's story contains details of his violent assault. I am not including this to be morbid. I'm including it to highlight what wankers these guys were. All four men, Patricio, Alejandro, Fabian, and Raul, went to the plaza and then went to the San Borja Park to get drunk at about 9 p.m. There, they found Daniel sleeping on a park bench. He was clearly drunk, and initially, they didn't go near him. Soon after they arrived, they were quite quickly running low on drink, so Patricio sent Raul to the store to buy more booze. When Raul returned, he saw that Patricio and Alejandro were beating Daniel. This beating started off rather tamely, and Raul assumed it was just Patricio and Alejandro trying to wake the young guy up. They slapped Daniel across his head and his face. But then it escalated really quickly when they roused him and they realized he was gay. They started punching him more viciously and with more force. They then dragged him to another part of the park which was more secluded. After striking him a few more times, they left Daniel lying injured on the ground while they had some more drinks. And then Raul was sent back to the store to get more booze. When he returned, Patricio, Alejandro, and Fabian were relentlessly kicking Daniel as he lay on the ground. They kicked his body, his legs, his arms, and his head. When they stopped kicking him, Alejandro broke a bottle over Daniel's head, and Patricio used the broken bottle to carve 3 swastikas into Daniel's body. Alejandro then grabbed a large stone and smashed it down 2 into Daniel's head. When he was finished, Fabian took the same stone and threw it over and over again onto Daniel's legs, completely smashing the bones in his thighs and shins to pieces. All of this happened about 50 meters from a police booth, which guards a local chapel, and only meters from the location of the night watchman who patrolled the park. No one heard or saw anything. At around 2:30 a.m., after putting out their cigarettes on Daniel's body and torturing him for almost 6 while they drank rum, they all went their separate ways. They left Daniel lying unconscious in the park with a part of his ear cut off, crushed legs and broken arms, severe head injuries, swastikas carved onto his chest and body from the neck of a broken bottle, and ants crawling in and out of his open wounds. Just before dawn, he was found by the night watchman who was patrolling the park. Daniel had no wallet or ID when he was taken to the hospital, so his family were completely unaware about what had happened. When Daniel had told his mother that he would be staying with a friend, she didn't think it was unusual. When she didn't hear from him on Saturday, she wasn't too worried. He did usually get in touch with her at some point, but he was a 24-year-old man. He could be out partying for the entire weekend, or he could just be with some friends and didn't have a free moment to get in touch. He was, after all, an adult with his own life. But by Sunday, he hadn't returned home, and she had become very concerned. She decided to contact the police and file a missing persons report. When she was filing the missing persons report, based on her description, the police identified Jacqueline's missing son Daniel as the young man who had been found with extensive injuries in the San Borja Park. Jacqueline was frantic. She didn't believe it. She could not rationalize how this had happened to her son. She, along with various family members, had told him many times never to go out alone at night because people like him were easy prey for neo-Nazis. She firmly believed that Daniel would never be so flippant with his own safety. Surely whoever was lying in hospital couldn't be Daniel. There must have been some kind of mistake. She couldn't wrap her head around it, but she dashed to the hospital anyway. When Jacqueline arrived at the hospital, she could see from outside the room that the broken young man lying in the hospital bed was her son. A nurse asked her if she was sure that she wanted to see Daniel. After all, he was in extremely bad shape and it would be very distressing to see him. But Jacqueline said she didn't care, she just wanted to sit with her son. When she entered the room, she didn't recognize him. His face was puffed up, and she thought that he looked like a pumpkin. It wasn't just his face that was swollen. His entire body was destroyed. The surgeons had worked tirelessly to save Daniel's life since he arrived the previous day. He had received surgery to remove a blood clot on his brain, and he had metal plates throughout his arms and legs knitting his bones together. He was going to need much more surgery. But for the moment, they just needed the swelling from the assault and the initial surgery to subside. Due to the effects of the assault and the various surgical interventions, his body was in a lot of trauma, so in order to assist his recovery, they put him into an induced coma. Daniel's father, siblings and extended family all rallied around and they took turns sitting by his bedside. They wanted to ensure that he was never left on his own, not even for a moment. They also provided the police and investigating officers with any assistance that they could. In the meantime, the attack on Daniel was gaining national and international media attention. Chile had become the center of a media storm, which highlighted the lack of protection for those people who had experienced hate crimes. Daniel's vicious assault made politicians and celebrities take a stand and speak out. The singer, Ricky Martin, posted on his Twitter, quote, "No more hatred, no more discrimination. I hope that justice is done now. Lots of light to Daniel and his whole family." End quote. Boy George also took to Twitter saying, quote, "This is awful. Chile, come on. Prayers for Daniel." End quote. This outpouring of anger, frustration and international condemnation caused the President of Chile to urge Parliament to speed up the adoption of the law on hate crimes. It had been languishing for 7 years, but enough was enough. Something had to be done. They put the wheels in motion to show that they were taking this seriously. For almost a week, Daniel's attackers had been the most wanted people in the city. The police were relentless in hunting them down. And on Friday the 9th of March, just a week after Daniel's attack, they were caught. They were identified because the conscience of Raul Lopez weighed heavily on him, and he was extremely tormented by what had happened to Daniel. He confessed everything to the police, and he gave the names of the other attackers, Patricio, Alejandro, and Fabian. They were arrested, and all four men were charged with attempted murder. The case against the four men was strong. They had Raul's confession, and it was clear that Patricio was the ringleader. However, Patricio denied Raul's version of events, and he told a very different story. He said that the group had been drinking, and that they came across Daniel when he was passed out drunk on a park bench. Patricio said that he approached Daniel and attempted to wake him up. Patricio asked Daniel where he was from, and then told him to go home. He said he watched as Daniel left the park. Soon afterwards, Raul left the park to get some more alcohol, and he found Daniel asleep on a zebra crossing, so he brought Daniel back to where they originally found him. Afterwards, Patricio saw two people come into the park and go towards Daniel, who was now fast asleep on the bench again. Apparently, these two people attempted to rob Daniel, so Patricio intervened and helped him by scaring away the two would-be thieves. Patricio became concerned for Daniel because of his lack of awareness of what was going on around him. He woke Daniel up and they began to talk. When Daniel awoke, he started crying and asking why he was injured, but Patricio calmed him down and he gave him a beer. Patricio left the park at about 10 p.m. with Alejandro, and they made their way to Alejandro's girlfriend's house. He didn't see Daniel again. Patricio also claimed that afterwards, when he found out about the attack and realized that he had seen Daniel earlier that night, he called the police twice to offer his assistance with the investigation. Alejandro's story pretty much matched Patricio's story, but with slightly more elaborations. Alejandro's girlfriend was questioned about this version of events, and she said that none of that happened. She informed the police that they didn't arrive at her house until nearly dawn, and she had heard them talking about how they had beaten up a kid in the park. She added that Alejandro lied in his statement and backed up Patricio's story because he was afraid of him. Furthermore, the fourth member of the group, Fabian, also destroyed Patricio and Alejandro's alibis. Although he initially refused to speak with police, Fabian eventually told them that everything that Raul had said in his confession was true, and that Patricio and Alejandro's stories were lies. The case against the four men was now solid. The police had confessions from two members of the group, and these confessions were tying Patricio, who was a neo-Nazi, to the swastikas carved on Daniel's body. In the meantime, Daniel's family continued to remain at his bedside. Even though he was unconscious, they constantly talked to him, and gradually he started to wake up from his coma. Initially, he only opened and closed his eyes slowly, but quite soon after that, he showed signs that he was alert and awake. He was able to focus his gaze on who was speaking to him, and he showed signs that he understood what was being said. He occasionally smiled. His mother, father, and siblings were overjoyed. Daniel was on the mend. It was more than the doctors had hoped for, given his extensive and life-changing injuries. After a few days, as Daniel continued to improve, he was told that he received a message from Ricky Martin, and it made him laugh. He hadn't been aware of the media coverage of his attack, and he was flattered by the attention. Although the flattery and attention didn't take away his pain, he often spent a lot of time crying when he was awake. The pain and the trauma of what had happened to him was immense. 2 weeks after he arrived in hospital, Daniel suffered a heart attack. The heart attack wasn't fatal, but he was put back into a coma and his family were informed that he would more than likely have neurological damage. Soon after this, his family were informed that Daniel had no brain activity and he wouldn't survive. After 3 weeks in hospital, Daniel died at 7:45 p.m. on the 27th of March 2012. He died because he was gay. Daniel's house was decorated with flowers and white balloons. Hundreds of people lined the streets to pay their respects to him as his coffin made its way from his home to the cemetery. Along the route to the cemetery, many people held up his photo, and others held up signs asking for the law to be changed to protect minorities. Only close family members were allowed inside the cemetery. so the remaining well-wishers gathered at a stage in a nearby park to celebrate Daniel's life. Musicians played their instruments, and people spoke candidly on stage about the change that was needed. Meanwhile, the four scumbags who had been arrested had their charges upgraded from attempted murder to first-degree murder, which was driven by hate. The intense vilification for this crime against Daniel was gaining more and more traction. The United Nations released a statement which said, quote, "We deplore the violent criminal act that took the life of this young man and urge the Chilean Congress to pass a law against discrimination, including on the grounds of sexual orientation and gender identity, in full compliance with relevant international human rights standards. This case should be seen in the wider context of the hate-motivated violence against lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender persons around the world." End quote. Given the amount of international media coverage of Daniel's murder, all eyes were on the Chilean government. They could not fuck this up. As the trial was underway, the gruesome details of Daniel's attack became public knowledge. Daniel's father, Ivan, said, quote, "The first time I heard the details about how these guys were attacking my child, it was super painful, hurtful. It is impossible for me or my family to forgive them." End quote. Daniel's mother, Jacqueline, wanted all four men to receive life sentences and said it didn't matter who was the ringleader. She said, quote, "None of those who participated in the beating of Daniel that night tried to help him. Doing nothing, staying still, also killed him." End quote. For Jacqueline, it was hard for her to understand how another human being could do such unspeakable acts of violence to another person. Before the court case, and before she heard the full extent of what had happened to Daniel, she used to think about the mothers of the perpetrators who were being mentally torn apart because of the children they had raised. But afterwards, when she realised the full details of what had happened on that fateful night, she couldn't bring herself to have any compassion for any of them. Raul Lopez's mother approached Jacqueline crying, pleading with Jacqueline to forgive her son. Jacqueline replied, quote, "What they did to my son is unforgivable." End quote. The four men who attacked Daniel were vilified by everyone in Chile, and being in prison didn't protect them. They were hated just as much in there. While they were waiting in prison for their court case, they received death threats from other prisoners. Patricio, the neo-Nazi ringleader, was stabbed by another inmate, but he soon recovered from his injuries and was returned to his cell. Not that anyone would truly give a fuck about him being stabbed. 18 months later, on the 17th of October 2013, all four men were found guilty of first-degree murder. The judge said that Patricio, Alejandro, Raul, and Fabian were guilty of a crime of extreme cruelty and total disrespect for human life. 10 days later, they were back in court for their sentencing. Fabian received 7 years in prison because of his cooperation with investigators and his lack of prior convictions. Alejandro and Raul each received 15 years in prison. Patricio, the neo-Nazi ringleader, was sentenced to life. Good. Evil bastard. People were outraged throughout Chile that in 2012 someone could be so viciously beaten and tortured because they were gay. The public took to their social media accounts and used it for good by calling for action. The government listened to the pleas of their citizens, the national and international media, and the statements from the United Nations. 4 months after Daniel died, a law was passed by the Chilean Parliament which banned discrimination based on race, ethnicity, religion, sexual orientation, gender, appearance, or disability. It became known as the Zamudio Law in honour of Daniel. The outpouring of love towards Daniel's family was huge. Total strangers offered their support to them, but the family struggled in the early aftermath. The pain of losing Daniel was so significant that they understandably had very dark days. Days where they felt they couldn't go on. Daniel's father tormented himself about how he could have protected Daniel more. He said that he was consumed with internal dialogue, including, quote, "What if I told him to always be cautious? But cautious how? To dress normal? People shouldn't have to dress the way other people want just to be safe." End quote. But they soon found hope and strength in the most unlikely of places. Daniel's mother said, quote, "I have taken refuge in my children. They give me encouragement. People come up to me in the street and hug me, and that gives me strength too." End quote. They turned their pain into a long-lasting legacy, which has had far-reaching benefits for many families. Daniel's parents set up the Daniel Zamudio Foundation, which is an organization made up of Daniel's family and friends. The organization works with the parents and families of young LGBT plus people and provides them with the support with accepting their child's sexual orientation. On the year anniversary of Daniel's attack, a candlelight vigil was held to remember him. Over 400 people walked to the San Borja Park to the place where he was beaten and tortured. Daniel, although almost entirely invisible when he was alive, has a legacy which is incredibly visible in his death. His murder has had a lasting and immeasurable impact on the lives of many queer people in Chile today. Daniel's death may have resulted in changes which were designed to prevent hate crime against all protected characteristics. In light of these legal changes, Daniel's father was asked if he thought Chile was still going to be homophobic. He replied, quote, "Yes, in general, yes. We have an idiosyncrasy, that of being macho. Chilean men are super macho. As long as you don't have a gay son, you continue to be macho. But when you have a gay son, and you love him, you stop being macho. And that doesn't matter. As long as you love your gay son, being macho doesn't matter." End quote. The world has progressed so much since discrimination against the LGBT plus community became illegal in many countries around the world. According to the United Nations, there are 195 countries in the world. Out of those 195 countries, it is still illegal to be a gay man in 72 of them. It is still illegal to be a gay woman in 44 of them. And any same-sex activity in 11 of them could result in the death penalty, imagine, in the year 2021. Even in countries where LGBT plus people are protected by law, they are still not being treated fairly or equally. Some people and some leaders of countries are dicks. Let's put people with outdated and harmful views, including world leaders, in a minority by showing solidarity towards LGBT plus people around the globe. You've only got one life, so live your life with sparkle. And don't hurt anyone. Please. Until next time.